Today on Wings.
Privatization adds to more debt. That's something we don't talk about enough.
Feminist political ecologist Ruth Nyambura from Kenya talks with Nicole Hill and Valerie Jean, hosts of the Water Wednesday podcast.
Water power swallowing, water bottle, don't bother with it. Politicians, politics flowing like it's bottomless. Started it and finished it. Water needed to swim in it. More valuable than oil. Be careful, homie, you spilling it.
Welcome, welcome, beloved community. We are back with yet another installment of the People's Water Board Coalition's Water Wednesdays webcast. And today we have the pleasure of having a former guest from across the oceans in the motherland. As always, I take this journey with my co-host, Valerie Jean. And we'll never forget our behind-the-scenes tech person, Miss Angelica. And today, people, we have Miss Ruth Nyambura back on our show. She is the convener of Ramani, which is the African Ecofeminist Collective. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule. Nyambura, we appreciate it, especially with the time difference.
Thank you so much. The last time we had a conversation was just a few weeks to the World Water Forum in Dakar, Senegal. And at that point, I was part of the global collective that was organizing the Alternative World Water Forum. And now organizing is taking place around water struggles and water justice, not just here in Kenya, where I'm situated, not just across the continent of Africa, but across the world, but also in solidarity with our siblings in Palestine, because occupation in Palestine is also about water struggles and politics of sovereignty. So it's really fantastic to be back here with both of you and the collective in the United States.
Thank you so much, Amber. I'm glad that you brought that up because our next show is going to be talking about how water is weaponized around the world. So thank you for bringing that up. I'm so grateful that you're here and that we're able to talk about the water struggles happening there in Kenya. And that's the same kind of conversation that's happening here. It's just a global conversation about privatizing water all over. So I think this is very, very important for everyone, not just here in the U.S., but all around the world. Can you tell our listeners about the government's intention to privatize water in Kenya?
Okay. So I'm going to start not just from privatization. It's important for us to remember that privatization is basically a manifestation of the sickness, and I call it a sickness of capitalism. It's one of the ways in which to understand what privatization of the commons is, you know, the long legacies of enslavement, colonialism, and neoliberal politics. So what has basically happened? We have a new government that came into power in 2022. We had an election in August. The government came to power in September. And immediately we had a series of policy changes or recommendations. And to begin with, it's important also for me to say that we are facing a serious debt crisis in Kenya, but not just in Kenya. It must be seen within the wider continent. You know, since 2020, with the onset of the pandemic COVID-19, many countries, of course, because of the political economy and the economic issues, many countries on the continent of Africa are highly indebted. What happened is that, you know, in response to that, many countries in Africa were forced to go to the IMF and the World Bank. You know, institutions that I call absolute vultures, you know, they're forced to go to the IMF and World Bank for debt relief. And, you know, as part of IMF World Bank conditionalities, the government was forced to remove subsidies. In fact, just this morning, I was reading, there's a headline in the Kenyan newspapers about how the Kenyan president, you know, the government has been forced to remove basically all forms of subsidies as a condition for an IMF loan and the kind of restructuring. And of course, we know what it means when, you know, these conditionalities are imposed on the people. It means that there's forced privatization of public services, you know, water infrastructure, you know, transportation, public services need to generate a profit instead of seeing them as our right, as commons, as, you know, public utilities, as a good in and of themselves. That this should not be put in the scope of we need to make profit out of, you know, of trains, of buses. So we need to make profit out of water, which of course we know is that the majority, you know, the poor, and it's also very gendered, women, and especially with regard to water, because of social reproduction, because of the kind of, you know, reproductive labor that women, that girls are forced to perform or culturally perform. It means that when you privatize commons, when you privatize public services, it impacts not just on the community, but it impacts on the most vulnerable, those on the front lines of various intersecting crises, the climate crisis, you know, reproductive crisis, economic injustice and crisis in very particular ways. So this is essentially what the government of Kenya has been forced to do. So basically, the Kenyan government has been proposing the passing of the privatization bill, which is actually passed, which basically focuses on privatization of public entities. It's a wide sweeping bill with really, really great ramifications. So the government basically wants to partner with private entities to basically take over public infrastructure with regards to water in the form of public-private partnerships, you know, which has basically been the new rage in the last decade, the last 10, 15 years across the world, a total failure where governments... Absolutely. Are forced to guarantee, they basically act as guarantors to private entities. These private entities are at liberty to give the worst services, you know, to increase the cost of utilities and public services with no ramifications to themselves. Yet,
and know, they don't care for it when it's left to commons.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Like when it's left to commons, we care for it. Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
They don't care for it.
So the, absolutely. So this is what we are seeing. You know, this is basically the mindset in Kenya. And, you know, just also to expand it, to move it out of Kenya into the rest of the continent. I mean, one of the places where we are told that, you know, we should look to solutions. This is South Africa. And I talk about South Africa because there's a really fantastic movement, the African Water Commons Collective, under the leadership of so many comrades of mine, such as Faiza Meyer, Connie Benson, you know, and they've really done fantastic political education over the years, you know, around what it actually means to privatize water, what it means to the poor, the working class, what it means in terms of race, in terms of class, you know, the gendered inequalities. But then in a place like South Africa, where you have legacies of apartheid, you know, what does it actually mean? Where you find that people living in what we call informal settlements, of course, the term that has its own complications, but you find that they pay more for water than a golf course. A golf course where the wealthy, the elite of society, frequent. You know, what does it actually mean? And you see that privatization doesn't bring profits to anyone but private entities. The labor, you know, in Kenya, there have been quite a number of labor protests around those who've been forced to work in, you know, water companies, for example, that are in a PPP type of model. So labor issues, poor services, degraded services, the exorbitant costs that have gone up. And of course, this PPPs or privatization adds to more debt. That's something we don't talk about enough, that we're saddled with even more debt, right? So that is basically
for years down the line.
Exactly. So that is basically the context that we are part of. But I want to say it's not just water privatization. We are seeing, for example, legislation around criminalization of peasant, indigenous seeds, traditional seeds, you know, heavy fines around that. You know, that's one point in terms of agriculture. We are seeing what, you know, the semi-privatization within the electricity and energy sector has meant. Also, so it's not just water, it must be seen along a continuum. And that's why I started by saying that it must be seen as particular, you know, the legacies, you know, of colonialism, of enslavement, neoliberal politics, and neoliberal globalization, what it has actually meant, you know, concretely and materially, that it is a system, these are systems that are, I like to call them, you know, death-giving systems. Instead of life
systems of death.
You know, systems of death. Absolutely.
All the time.
We on the front lines of multiple and intersecting crises are forced to continue shouldering.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you mentioned the golf course, because that's exactly what happened here in Detroit. They shut off whole neighborhoods at one time. But the golf course that's in the middle of right here on the north end where I'm at, they had huge water debt, like $75,000, never got shut off. But they shut off all the neighborhoods around
it. And they were never pressured
because nobody
to
could
pay
afford their
either.
Water. Like,
absolutely.
It's stark. I mean, this is a global systematic problem.
Yes.
All of the systems, especially capitalism, raping the entire planet.
But we've experienced
and we
that
see the
here.
Same thing here as far as the corporations being vultures, mm-hmm. right?
We were working on a Bill of Rights for citizens of Detroit that included transit and everything, and all of that was trying to be privatized.
All of it. Still.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I mean, and there's a lag, I think, in a little bit in the internet. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So actually wanted to say that they're not just vultures. They create the conditions, right? So they destroy what was working or what could work.
Right.
What they also do is that limit. Why I like to call it, we must think about it within the politics of the commons, because the commons, it basically means that we have a different relationship to one another. We have a different relationship to water, to biodiversity, to the ecosystem. This is what capitalism robs us. You know, this individualistic model of accumulation and accumulation and accumulation. So, you know, so it's they create the conditions. And when the systems have collapsed or are collapsing, they come back as vultures, because they always sit. They come and destroy, they stand back, blame the same governments that they have crippled, that they have forced to completely, you know, disinvest from the public, from public goods and public services. And then they come in and swoop again. It's literally obscene, whichever way you look.
Obscene.
They're usurpers.
Yeah.
They just come in to extract whatever wealth and basic commons they can from the community, from the earth, from the people, and just for profit. It's horrific.
Absolutely.
It is.
On Wings, you're listening to feminist political ecologist Ruth Nyambura, convener of Ramani, the African Ecofeminist Collective, speaking on the podcast Water Wednesday. It's hosted by Nicole Hill and Valerie Jean from Michigan, scene of the notorious Flint water system corruption disaster. Coming up, Nyambura mentions the discredited economic rationale, The Tragedy of the Commons, which posits that shared resources will be overused and depleted by multiple users, each trying to maximize his or her own benefit to the disregard of sustainability. Its corollary has been that privatizing the resource to one owner, these days often a corporation, would protect it from depletion.
Nicole, you had a question. Didn't you have a question?
Yes, I did. I wanted to ask Nyambura, can you kind of give our viewers the content, which I think you really already have answered this question, on why privatization is so harmful and so negative for your region?
The continent still has very high levels of inequalities, oppression and exploitation. And I mean to say exploitation, and I'm being very deliberate about the terminologies that I'm using, because this is a continent where people were enslaved, millions were enslaved. This is a continent that was colonized, that was used as a source of raw materials for the elite in the global north. And it continues to be a space of extraction. This continent is not poor. It's impoverished, deliberately impoverished by the policies that are forced on us, impoverished by wars that continue, that are actually funded, right, by particular global elite. And so imagine what it means on top of that to actually privatize the little that people have, right? The water, you know, the food systems that we have, right?
Yeah.
So it basically is that we already have so little that is actually ours, right? Because it's like a cookie
They've
jar.
They've taken all
you
the
have
comments.
A million hands yeah. inside the cookie jar that we cannot. We produce the jar, we produce the cookies, but cannot even access it because it is on the labor of poor and working class and indigenous peoples on this continent, on the backs of women, on which global wealth is produced. So basically, privatization continues in the logic of the tragedy of the commons, you know, as we are ridiculously told, right? So what we have is that the labor of the people who actually produce, right? The poor, the working class, African women, African children, right? Are completely removed from the benefits. You know, this is their inheritance, the continent, the ecosystems. This is basically our inheritance as Africans, you know? And of course, they're saying that, you know, we inherit not for ourselves, but for future generations. So we've been completely cut off. So I want to see it in a very political term. When you look at the level of debt, when you have privatization, so many countries, so many places across the continent, we already have a debt crisis because of structural adjustment programs that were forced on the continent 40, 50 years ago. You know, so you have a debt crisis. And then what privatization does is add more debt onto existing debt. And then disconnection from ecosystems. Right. And basically you become a pauper. And actually, it's a form I like to see privatization in terms of a form of enslavement of the people.
It really is.
A form of enslavement where, you know, we are told that people are told that unless you have money, you can't access water. You can't access health care. You can't access food, you know, rights. And not just rights. I don't want to think about them in a very liberal sense of rights, because water, when you think about it in terms of commons, it's beyond a right, right? There's a spiritual element to it.
That's right.
You know, political element to it, an economic element to it. This is just not material things. And we don't think about it just as things. This is people's histories. This is who we are, our water, our land, our food, our seeds. Mm-hmm. That kind of disconnection also, we must look at it, even as we critique the material aspects of privatization, we must think about it in terms of deeper cosmologies of liberation.
That's right.
You know, the pluriverses of justice, the pluriverses of liberation and the possibilities. And I was actually reflecting on this just before this conversation. One of the things also that privatization does is that it works like capitalism to limit the possibilities of imagination, the liberatory imagination that we could have. Ultimately, that's what it does. It tells us that every man, woman for themselves, right? Work as hard as possible. If you don't work hard as possible and you don't have the money to afford all these things, then there's something wrong with you. No, there's something wrong with the system.
Yeah, no.
This is not an individual problem. Yeah, this is not just a technological problem, right? This is a political
systems are supposed to provide for people.
Exactly,
it's a broken system,
exactly.
A damaged system.
Absolutely. And I believe that...
Well, and it was built on racism.
Yes,
so that's how it's going to run.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's
so we must
racism.
Also, we must challenge, ultimately, the logic. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, we must challenge the logic of the market as a great arbiter of rights. Yeah.
Right. Every day challenge capitalism.
Yes.
Every day. What can people do to get involved and learn more?
Okay, I'm going to give a shout out to the Africa Water Commons Collective, doing important work in South Africa, Southern Africa, but increasingly supporting political education and also feminist, popular and political education across the continent with regard to water. Also, one space that I'm now involved in, I'm part of the committee of the African Water Justice Network, that became a thing right after the Alternative World Water Forum in Dakar. That's a learning space, but a beautiful organizing space on the continent around water struggles. And at Ramani, we did a water poster series in the lead up to the Alternative World Water Forum. And I remember us thinking through water struggles as an intersecting struggle.
Yes.
Water is connected to the land. We have to think about cross movement, work and get very, very serious about cross-movement work.
Yes.
Those working on seed sovereignty, those working on food sovereignty, agrarian struggles, those working around sovereignty, because we can see what the occupation in Palestine actually tangibly means. It also has to work with anti-war activists. We can see the devastation in Sudan. We can see the devastation in the Democratic Republic of Congo, what it actually means. So it must be, you know, it must also involve labor, right? It must involve unions, lifting up movements, learning from one another. Because I feel like along the way, especially with the liberal order, we got so comfortable, we're losing the recipes. We lost the recipes of struggle, right? When you think about the Black Panthers, for example, the kind of solidarity work they did with Palestine, with Puerto Rico, for example, the Young Lords, the kind of, you know, radical work that they did. I mean, you think about, for example, Kwame Ture, the kind of solidarity work with anti-colonial movements on the continent. When you think about the Greater Non-Aligned movement, right? When you think about the anti-globalization movements and the movements that fought against, you know, the WTO, you know, the Battle of Seattle.
Yes.
Where is that power? Where is that organizing? Where is that coming together? Mm-hmm. When you think about women's movements and feminist movements and queer movements, if we do not figure out how to do transnational, transversal work, transnational, transversal forms of solidarities, where it's not just identity politics, but thinking about what are our commonalities in struggle. Yes, I am a Black woman in Africa, and I experience a very set of particular struggles. But as Audre Lorde says, there's no such thing as a single issue struggle because we do not live single issue lives. Forms of exploitation and oppression that I experience in Nairobi can be connected to the exploitation and the systems in South Africa, you know, in Detroit. I can think about in terms of the privatization of the rail system in the United Kingdom, thinking myself in Kenya, literally with such a serious debt crisis. In those of us in Kenya and Ghana have such a serious debt crisis, you know. What about the movements in Argentina also facing a serious debt crisis? Yes. Thinking about Chile, thinking about Mexico, being able to have this sort of like a traffic of ideas. That's the kind of organizing and solidarity that is necessary. And also thinking about the liberation of Palestine, of West Papua.
And we're ripe for it now. Like the whole world is ripe for it right now.
You know, Western Sahara, right? This for this liberation for the Sahrawi people to think about space that are still occupied, facing settler colonialism, facing colonialism. If we do not see our struggles in that form, we are going to be destroyed. Capitalism has no borders and has no boundaries. The only borders and boundaries for us, and especially those of us who are Black, people of color, those of us who are queer, you know, othered as disposable by the system. Being able to have this sort of like a traffic of ideas, right, between different movements, different sites of exploitation, different forms of oppression, but also thinking about the radical possibilities of liberation and solidarity. So I think that is important. But also there's such amazing work happening. We're seeing that there's a whole remunicipalization movement happening. You know, we're seeing what's happening in Barcelona. We've seen remunicipalization of water in parts in Ghana and in Nigeria. And this is because of movements fighting back. Because we're not going to go silently into the night. We are not. No. We have always resisted.
Absolutely.
Our ancestors resisted.
That's right.
We will resist. And everyone else that comes after us will continue to resist. And ultimately, you know, we must reclaim the idea of a commons. And that means challenging the logic of capitalism. We must challenge that anyone is disposable. And I always say people need to find spaces where they can organize. Join a movement. Join an organizing space. Yeah. Do things together. You cannot challenge things sitting by yourself. There's only so much you can do.
Right.
We have to reclaim ideas. We organize. We read together. We do things together. We support one another. We have to be such an important and giant block. We have to be in our millions, as we say, because we are in our millions. We are in our billions. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the whole world's ripe for that kind of organizing right now. And I do think that it's important that we're sitting together, even if it starts a small group and we just invite mm-hmm. our friends over and we're reading, right?
Yes.
That's what brought me into the movement. There was a group of folks who were like, hey, you need an education on capitalism. Yes. You need to understand this. You don't understand the system. They brought me in. They gave me love. They invited me to dinner and we read books and things. And mm-hmm. here I am 15 years later, still doing this work, still organizing. Those things are so important.
Yeah, but we also have to train the younger people as well. Because I think that's mm-hmm. why I've always been involved in some type of movement. As you were saying, Yambura, my father was a Black Panther. I grew up in that movement arena where it was always something that my father was going to get involved in. You know, he always told me, like, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And I've always kept that at the forefront.
I must say something about what the African Ecofeminist Collective, Ramani, has been doing. Political education is very central. You know, Thomas Sankara said, I'm just going to paraphrase him, that a soldier with no political consciousness or education, they're dangerous. They're literally going to end up like as a thug. You need to have an understanding of the system, because it is an understanding of the system that allows you to see how water struggles are connected to land struggles, to food struggles, how they're connected to, you know, criminalization, the prison industrial complex, the military industrial complex. These are the tools, right? But also, of course, not just theory and understanding and education for the sake of it. If it's not used within organizing, because also organizing spaces are also space sites of education, political education, you know, and creation, co-creation of theory. For you to fight something, you have to understand it. So political education and rooted within organizing spaces and movements. I mean, we say something in Kenya, but I think it's something we generally see across the continent, is that we become people who talk big English, right? Big English that really does nothing for anyone.
Right.
We must skin in the game always.
Always.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Amber. It feels so important to me for us to connect all of this and to be able to share it with people. We are in a moment of, I really think, global consciousness, not just to take back the commons, but to save each other, to protect each other.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of people are getting radicalized right now and hate that it's on the back of the Palestinian people.
Absolutely. I can see it in real time. I literally can see it. It's so unfortunate what we're witnessing in Palestine. But I cannot remember ever seeing the kind of politicization that is happening right now.
Yes.
And if nothing else, let the cause of Palestine usher us into a global space of resistance and liberation for every single oppressed person in the world.
Ruth Nyambura is a feminist political ecologist from Kenya and convener of Ramani, the African Ecofeminist Collective. She was a guest on the podcast Water Wednesday, hosted by Nicole Hill and Valerie Jean. The podcast is a project of the People's Water Board, a coalition that advocates for human rights to water, sanitation, equitable access, and affordability for impacted communities. Find them at peopleswaterboard.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be found on the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Hi there, this is Jan Arden, and if you're listening to something fabulous, well, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Simon Fraser University Radio, streaming on the internet at cjsf.ca.
This is broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Noise of Carpet explores 1990s indie classics, recently exhumed underground gems, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 9 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Tune in if you're a slacker, loser, or creep for an hour of positively nostalgic triggers and some new stuff too on CJSF 90.1 FM or streaming at cjsf.ca.